They have to kick out just 2 days.
The House Committee on Revenue for February 10th, 2009 will come to order. Our first order of business is a public hearing on House Bill 2073, and we open that public hearing. Paul?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I left my folder down below.
Oh, okay. We have so many items to handle today that the first one got left behind.
I hope this is an indication of how my day will go, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, we hope not.
Could be. A leading indicator. House Bill 2073 was a pre-session filed bill by the House Revenue Interim Committee. And what it does is that it adds the governor's emergency declaration to the triggers that are used for the statutory Oregon Rainy Day Fund. It still requires a three-fifths vote. Remember how the triggers work. There's a finding. We have two that are related to revenue, one that's related to employment, and then if any of those findings are made, then a three-fifths vote is required in each chamber to access the fund. In the Education Stability Fund, it has those identical triggers, but it also has the trigger in which the governor can declare an emergency. And again, with a three-fifths vote in each chamber, the Education Stability Fund can be accessed. So what this bill does is it sets up the trigger so that they are identical to the Education Stability Fund by adding the governor's emergency declaration to ways in which withdrawals can be made from the fund.
All right. Do we have anyone to be heard today on this measure? No one to be heard.
Mr. Chair, can I?
Yes, Representative Berger.
Can I ask Paul?
Please.
By my reading of the bill, so this is the same language as the stability fund?
Representative Berger, yes.
By my reading with the or in there in line 19, it's either A or B, but not both.
Yes, it's A or B or C. And
Wait a minute, I'm not looking at C. No. Small A, line 9. Small B, line 20.
Mm-hmm.
Or. And so you can either have all of those legislative findings and a three-fifths vote, or you can have three-fifths vote in the governor and skip large A, B, and C.
Yes.
Is that your reading of that?
Yes, Representative Berger. So you still have to have the three-fifths. So the governor's emergency declaration would be comparable to one of the other three findings.
In other words, either the governor says it's and three-fifths, or the legislature finds those things and three-fifths, but not both. So in essence, lessens the standards.
Yes, I would say, Representative Berger, what it does is it adds an additional trigger. So you could have a situation where none of the other three are met,
but
the governor declares an emergency, and then you get to three-fifths, and then you can access the fund. Yeah, so it adds an additional way to make withdrawals from the fund, and it does use the same language that's in the Constitution for the Education Stability Fund.
And the same, Paul, I'm sorry to belabor this because I've got the statute for the Education Stability Fund triggers in front of me, but the same is true for the Educational Stability Fund, that the A or B, the three-fifths, finding, or the three-fifths, the governor.
Yes. I guess the example that I think of, Representative Berger, would be, let's say that, and usually the example that's used is that there is some type of a natural disaster, for example, and you haven't met the 6 months declining employment, you haven't met the revenue forecast falling 2% below the close of session, but the governor declares an emergency and then comes to the legislature and says, I want to make withdrawals from the stability fund. The legislature would use that finding and then get a three-fifths vote to access the fund.
And, Mr. Chair, this is also, I think, appropriate to get on the record that this bill takes effect upon passage, so it could have implications for the current budget year.
That's true, Representative Berger, but keep in mind that in our current situation, we have the 6 month declining employment trigger is met, the 2% below revenue forecast is met, and in fact, we think that there's also a good chance that the quarterly economic revenue forecast will be at least 3% less than appropriation in the current biennium that applies only to the May forecast. So there's a chance that even that one will be met as we look ahead. But clearly B and C are met in our current situation. So this would add an additional trigger to those.
So to conclude, if the legislature determined that it wanted to utilize the rainy day fund, it could do so on the basis of at least two of the triggers in A, and the one in B is unnecessary. And Representative Berger, my view of this amendment and what it means is that it doesn't apply to the economic cycle. It applies to something else, like the tsunami on the coast or the big earthquake. Because in an economic downturn, you would have at least one of the large letter triggers met anyway before
Correct.
You'd even think about going into the rainy day fund.
So basically, Mr. Chair, that does help clarify that what we're trying to get at here is that there may be some reason other than an economic downturn that someone could visualize. However,
if you
being around for the creation of the rainy day fund, I had economic downturn in mind for its purpose, not tsunamis or earthquakes.
Of course.
Let me put that on the record.
Sure. think about a situation like the hurricane that hit New Orleans, where if it had been Oregon, having the capacity to access some money immediately might have been very important to us in that kind of exigency. It's hard for me to imagine, frankly, that the legislature would trigger this fund based on something small.
Not me, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. No, I understand.
Sorry. Thank you for the discussion.
No, I understand. Is there other... we're in public hearing, and I don't see any witnesses, so let's talk. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is there any sidebar on the emergency? The governor merely needs to declare, quote, an emergency. Any emergency will do?
Representative Benz, I think of the triggers in terms of being either budgetary, economic, or political, and the political trigger in this is the three-fifths requirement. So that's the limiting factor, that you have to have a supermajority in both chambers in order to access the fund.
I'm just curious again. I'm not sufficiently clear on what the governor can declare an emergency over. So I'm ignoring the three-fifths for just a moment. What's the least that the governor can call out as an emergency?
Representative Benz, there isn't a definition of emergency in the bill, I mean, or in the Constitution for the Education Stability Fund. So it's a matter of judgment and credibility for that emergency declaration, and then it's up to the legislature to determine if that's sufficient and a wise use of the account. And again, that's where the supermajority comes into play.
One follow-up.
Yes, please.
So for purposes of the legislature making its mind up using this trigger, the governor would have had to have declared some sort of an emergency, and then the three-fifths would have to vote.
And in fact, that's also, even now, even though we're in a situation where the other triggers are met, with the declining economy, you still have to have the three-fifths. Right? Still, the finding is not sufficient.
Right.
And this, the finding is a necessary but not sufficient condition. So this would add an additional necessary condition, but would retain the current sufficient, which is the three-fifths.
I wonder if somebody might want to take a whack at a definition of emergency. That might deal with the concerns that some people have about the bill. Representative Springer.
The emergency issue was mine that Cliff, that Representative Vance just brought up. Is what is an emergency?
Mm-hmm. I would be concerned with a law like the one we have in a situation where there were a couple of billion dollars in the account, some major natural disaster happened, but we had to wait 5 months for the economic results of the natural disaster before we could access the money. But I think Representative Bence raises a very interesting point, and that is, without a definition of what an emergency is, you might decide that something pretty minor is an emergency if you wanted to. Representative Call.
So I've been looking at for a while trying to figure out exactly what an emergency was, so I'm glad we're talking about it. It seems to me that there are lots of mechanisms in place by which, you know, disasters are declared both at the state and the federal level. And so we might need to reinvent the wheel here. If what we're talking about is a natural disaster, then there are already definitions and mechanisms in place. And if we're concerned about the veracity of the governor's definition or how he or she might apply that term, it seems to me that there's pretty easy avenues to get at this problem.
Yes, Representative Gelser.
I would follow up on Representative Calls, but caution us that there are other disasters that aren't natural, like terrorist attacks as well.
Right, and of course a pandemic could easily result in that kind of a conclusion. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say that I think that the supermajority is really the key to making sure that the governor's decision on what's an emergency is agreed to by this body. And that's what, you know, if we have a three-fifths majority voting with the governor in both chambers, that's exactly what it takes and probably what it should take.
Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, our rainy day fund is a pretty new thing. In my construct, when we were working on this, and I'd like to remind us that we basically built the thing with kicker money that was owed to Oregon corporations. Let's get that out there and remind us of where this money came from. And in the discussions at the time, it was about economic disaster and downturns in the economy that we were doing that. We were trying to protect ourselves from that disaster. There was no discussion of pandemics, earthquakes, or any of the other things that there could have been discussions of, but there were not. And I'm really bothered by coming along and saying, oh, well, anything could happen, so we need another way of taking this money. I think that the sideboards are comfortable to me. They have to do with economic downturn, which is why we put it in there in the first place. And while we may face those kinds of disasters, I think there are other avenues for relief than this particular fund. And I for one, would speak to retaining this fund being for its purpose of economic disaster, because that was sort of what we talked about when we took the kicker from corporations, that economic downturn was more important than returning money to corporations that we owed them. So I'm kind of disturbed by this discussion of other kinds of disaster that the governor could envision being, you know, in some sense, more important. I'm just not wild about this bill. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to respond a little bit. I appreciate the comments that Representative Berger had and that Representative Call had as well, as far as finding a definition for emergency that would make people more comfortable. But The reason that I'm motivated to support the concept, at least, is the connection between the sorts of things we've talked about as far as natural disasters or pandemics or terrorist attacks leading to an economic downturn. I think that's something that it's a place where the access in appropriate ways to these funds could help the economic question as well. I appreciate the comments that was made.
I have the sense that we are groping toward a definition of emergency. anything else this morning? Last call. Anyone? We're in public hearing on House Bill 2073. Is there anyone who would like to be heard? I don't see anyone coming forward, so we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2073. And now I've managed to misplace my copy of the agenda. There it is. All right. Any reason not to go in order? What would you like to do?
We do have a bill introduction. Do you want to do that?
Oh,
first?
Okay. Paul reminds me we have bill introductions. We'll open a work session on bill introduction. Paul?
Okay. Lost count, Mr. Chair, on the number. We have a large number of bills, LCs, in front of you for introduction. Should have copies of all of them there at your spot. I'll go ahead and just briefly go through them. The first one I have here is LC 2653, which is at the request of the Association of Oregon Counties. What it does is it clarifies that apportionment provisions apply to local option taxes imposed by the county for roads. This is an option or an issue that came up in the last session as well. The next one is LC 1334, which deals with forest land special assessments and with for intensively managed hardwood timber. It allows for a shorter cycle to be eligible for the forest land special assessment.
This is the Poplar bill, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
The next one is LC 2197, and it's relating to utility public purpose charges, and what it does is it takes the public purpose charge, which currently has a sunset of 2026, and changes that to 2012. So it brings the sunset closer. The next one is LC 2460. This would be a revenue-raising bill. What it does is reduce the amount of federal income tax deductions and state credits allowable calculating your personal income tax, reduces them by 10% for a three-year period. So that's LC 2460. LC 2462. LC 2462 creates a 7.5% Oregon alternative minimum tax for taxpayers with federal adjusted gross income exceeding $125,000 or $250,000 for joint filers. LC 2606. LC 2606 deletes an.
Do we have that one?
Yes.
2606. Sorry about.
I don't seem to have that one.
You
got it. Okay, thank you.
We'll make sure we get the action. So we need some more copies of 2606. But what 2606 does is there is an exception on the sales factor in apportioning income. For a very specific one, which is a taxpayer that is in a forest products industry that owns and manages 100,000 or more acres in the state, but less than 400,000, this would delete that provision. By the way, we don't think that will have a revenue impact. That no longer applies. Okay.
Yes, thank you.
The next one is LC 2466. We have the last three, I believe, are all very similar. And basically what they are is changing the personal income tax rates in various ways, and they also have, all three of them have broad relating to clauses. So that's LC 2466, LC 2465, this is another one that changes the income tax rates, and LC 2467. So they're largely designed to be vehicles for the committee's use for future time.
Or to change their brackets.
Well, yeah, so that's the way they're written now, but I mean, they're changed, they easily can be, those rates can easily be changed in a way that the election committee wants to go.
All right. With the reminder that we do bill introductions as a courtesy, and that anyone, no one voting for a bill introduction is making any kind of a commitment of any kind about their support or opposition to any bill, is there a motion, Representative Bailey, on these LCs?
Mr. Chair, I move that LC draft number 2653 at the request of Association of Oregon Counties, LC draft 1334, LC draft 2197, LC draft 2460, LC draft 2462, LC draft 2465, LC draft 2466, LC draft 2467, LC draft 2606, LC draft 2653, which I already mentioned, be introduced as committee bill.
Representative Bailey, now I'm going to see if I can get the numbers right. Representative Bailey moves the introduction at the request of the Association of Oregon Counties of LC 2653. And then at the committee's initiative, House Bill 2606, 1334, 2460, 2462, 2466, 2465, and 2467 be introduced as committee bills. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, it is so ordered. Thank you. To the work sessions. Any particular order that you think we ought to proceed with these? I think probably
the first two are property tax and the next two.
Right. Just take them in the order they came then. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2161.
On this.
Good morning.
Morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. As you recall, House Bill 2161 updates archaic language, reorders definition, and conforms language throughout the central assessment statutes. It was originally adopted in 1909. Among other things, it permits delinquency penalty within 20 days from mailing up notice, and it changes lien date for taxes levied on mutual and cooperative electric distribution systems to March 1st of each year from February 1st, and that ensures consistency between subsections. You will find a couple of amendments.
The Dash 1 amendment was distributed at our public hearing, and the Dash 2 amendments are distributed today. And I do have one extra copy of the Dash 1 as if somebody needs it. Go ahead.
Okay. Dash 1 amendment actually eliminates definition of unit discussed in the original bill. And it allows continuing use of commonly accepted definition. And Dash 2 amendment, what it does is changes the appeal dates within 20 days to 30 days of notice. So by Dash 2 amendments, the statute permits appeal from notice of intent to impose delinquency penalty within 30 days instead of 20 days from mailing up notice.
And this is the Berger Amendment, if I remember correctly.
Yes, Mr. Chair, she discussed that, and then Representative Vance also discussed it.
Right. Okay. All right, well, we're in work session.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Berger.
I move the Dash 2 amendment. Did we do the Dash 1 already?
No, we haven't looked. We haven't worked either of these amendments yet.
Would you welcome?
Yes, please. Go ahead.
I move the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2161.
Representative Berger moves the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2161. Do you want to speak to your amendment?
Well, I remember the discussion. It eliminates that definition of unit, and that seemed like a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to talk myself into trouble, but it clarified, it simplified the sort of understanding.
Simplifies the bill. This is basically a technical maintenance of language bill to reduce the archaic language, and I think we were assured during public hearing that it doesn't change the law. Now, if we adopt the Dash 2s, of course, that will change the law, but only to a very small degree. Anything further on the Dash 1s? Is there any objection to the Dash 1s? I don't see any. The Dash 1s are adopted. Representative Berger?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill, the Dash 2 be amended into House Bill 2161.
Here, Representative Berger moves the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2161. To your motion?
This would... I'm trying to put this into words that I can live with on the record. I'm thinking on the fly here. It is in some way substantive. Dave, help me out here.
Representative Vance?
If I recall the discussion correctly, it was that it's from date of mailing and not from date of receipt. And so the concern is that if you only have 20 days from date of mailing, you might end up with it 10 days after it was actually mailed and then only have 10 days to file your appeal. So the idea here was to give an additional 10 days, and thus we wouldn't have to cause the agency to have to send by certified mail.
That was... thank you, Representative Vance. Well put, and I remember the discussion, and it seemed like a very good idea at the time, and therefore I would like to propose the Dash 2 amendments.
Thank you. Any further discussion on the Dash 2 amendments? Any objection to the Dash 2 amendments? I don't see any. And with that, the Dash 2 amendments are adopted. Representative Bentz, motion to adopt the bill as amended, move it to the floor with a due path recommendation.
Chairman, move that we pass the bill as amended and move to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bentz moves House Bill 2161 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Do I need to call a roll on this motion? Is there any objection to the motion? This is the motion to move the bill. Don't see any. With that, the motion is adopted and the bill goes to the floor. With a due pass recommendation. Please note for the record that all members voted in favor. All members present. I think we're all present, aren't we? Yes. A carrier. Now, this is a complex bill, although its intent is simple, and I would like to assign Representative Bentz to carry the bill. Is that acceptable to you, Representative?
That is acceptable.
Representative Bentz will carry the bill, and with that we'll close the work session on House Bill 2161. And open a work session on House Bill 2162. Dave?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2162 stipulates that 30-day appeal period will trigger at the end of at the time of delivery, when the final order of local property tax board is personally delivered to the appellant. By the way, in the last session, was it last session? ORS 305-280 approves an alternative delivery option of personal delivery, that is hand delivery, as an acceptable means of getting the final order of local property tax board to the appellant. But it fails to specify the start date of appeal for hand-delivered orders. So, again, this House Bill 2162 stipulates that 30-day appeal period will trigger at the time of delivery, when the final order of the local property tax board is personally delivered to the appellant.
And I suspect there's a story behind this bill, Representative Riley.
Yes, Mr. Chair. If you remember, the story is one was delivered, and several years after it was delivered, someone said they still didn't know it because it wasn't mailed.
Yes, but I'm sure there's a much more interesting story, but we didn't hear that part
hear
of it.
That.
Yes, thank
I
you.
I don't hear that.
Are there any amendments on this bill? We don't have any, do we? Representative Bailey, do you have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 2162 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bailey moves House Bill 2162 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Is there any objection to moving this bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation? I don't see any. So we'll move the bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Note, please, that all members supported the bill. Representative Call, will you carry?
Yes.
Thank you. Representative Call will carry the bill. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2162. And we change players here, is that right? Okay. All right. And I'm going to get back to my agenda, which I've managed to lose again. I think it's 2106, isn't it?
Correct.
Yes. We'll open the work session on House Bill 2106. Steve?
Mr. Chair, members, House Bill 2106 deals with school districts and their bonding process for new construction. For projects greater than $1 million in bonding, the current law requires a evaluation for safety improvements for the site. What the bill does is to allow the school district to change the site, or it's permissive, may select a site for the project that is different than what may have been noted at the time the voters approved the bond. But if the site is changed, it would require an evaluation for safety improvements for the new site, just as it would for any other site, and that would have to be done before the district issued the bonds for the project. So it's a timing thing in terms of it's after the voter approval, but before the bonds are actually sold.
Thank you. Are there any amendments to this bill?
Mr. Chair, there's no amendments, no revenue or fiscal impacts.
Okay, now we had some, and we do have all the documents we need, do we?
I believe so.
For a referral to the floor.
I don't know if that's... There's no fiscal item. I'm not sure if you have a copy of that.
Okay. But we have received notice that there's no fiscal.
Yes.
All right. Thank you. all right. Is there... Representative Bailey, is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2106 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bailey moves House Bill 2106 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? I don't see any. Is there any objection to moving this bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation? All right. Well, with that, the motion carries and the bill is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Springer, will you carry this bill?
Yes.
Representative Springer will carry. and we'll close the work session on House Bill 2106. Thank you. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2107. Mazin.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Just to sweeten your day at the end of the day. So I'm here. 2107 is the bill we've discussed before. It comes also from MDEC. And it is one of the bills that is more technical than policy issues. We've discussed these last time. This is just to bring it back to your memory and attention. It is the one that allows for the revenues to be used in the interest swap and interest exchange, changes the allowance for the district, water district, or the counties to take out the allowance for bonds without voter approval, and finally allows the also the sale of revenue bonds, the exchange for interest swaps using the revenue bonds from a different revenue bond. This is on the line 32, page 4. And finally, Mr. Chair, these are the main ideas that you have in this bill. We don't have a revenue impact on the bill. However, we don't have a fiscal statement yet.
Okay.
And we ask if you have to take action, we can postpone it until Thursday. That's when...
Right.
Because tomorrow is your day of joint meeting.
Right.
But the... I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
No, go ahead.
The MDEC representative and the treasurer is here in case you have any questions or discussions.
Thank you. Under the new rules that are in effect, you'll recall that we have to have received the fiscal statement before we can act on to send a bill to the floor, so we apparently cannot act today on this bill. If there are any questions or concerns about this bill, now would be a good time to raise them while we have the representative here. All right. We'll carry over the work session then on this bill until Thursday in the hopes that we will have received the necessary fiscal statement by that time. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2107. And I'm still missing my agenda. I'm informed by Representative Berger that we have exhausted the agenda, which is something we are often successful in doing. And that being the case, you get an hour and 20 minutes to do other work before, actually an hour and 35 minutes to do any work before session. And with that, we are adjourned until tomorrow at 1 o'clock when we meet with the Committee on Transportation.